This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Jim Hosma came within just over 200 votes of being elected to the state house 2 years ago. The Democrat is running again in the 62nd district that includes the cities of Battle Creek, Springfield, and Albion, as well as Albion, Bedford, Clarence, Convis, Lee, Penfield, and Sheridan townships. Jim Hosma, thank you very much for being here.
You're welcome. Thanks for the invitation, Gordon.
So if you were to be elected this time, what would you want to do if you got 2 years in the state house representing the city of Battle Creek and the surrounding area?
First, I'd be hopeful that I would be in the majority and that I could accomplish many of the things that we advocate that we're due if elected. I'd like to focus on bringing back infrastructure. We've had problems not just with roads and bridges, but with water infrastructure. We have challenges in broadband and infrastructure. I would prioritize infrastructure were I elected. And were a majority not elected, I would certainly, majority of Democrats not elected, I would certainly work across the aisle to try to accomplish infrastructure changes with any Republican majority with which I'd be working. Want to bring back good jobs to the Battle Creek and Albion communities, good jobs in terms of advanced manufacturing and renewable energy, make certain that two, our K-12 education is properly funded and is working better than it's working presently, better than it's been working the last 8 years. Want to prioritize higher education, make it more affordable for more students in relation to our Michigan public universities, and want to maintain the Medicaid opportunities that many of my clients from my law practice work have been advantaged from receiving since the 2004 Medicaid expansion.
So let's start by going through some of those priorities there. You mentioned that infrastructure includes not just roads. There's also water, and then there's broadband. So if the state's going to do all of that, improve its roads, make sure that people have safe drinking water through infrastructure and also expand broadband, how big of an investment is that, and where would you get the money?
Let me talk about water infrastructure firstly in relation to a sub-response to your question. We have a PFAS crisis in the Parchment area in the Springfield-Battle Creek area presently. The estimate presently is there are probably over 10,000 PFAS-infected wells around the state of Michigan. One of the things I would want to do is make sure that we look right away at strengthening how our water supply is measured in relation to how much PFAS we're going to be allowed. So instead of 70 parts per trillion, I'd try to focus on probably a tenth of that, 7 parts per trillion in relation to what we can do. I'd like to encourage an attorney general to work at suing some of the actors who have put these chemicals in our water supply, like 3M. I believe that Governor Snyder has encouraged the current attorney general to sue 3M, and he has elected not to do so. Try to ensure that we look at ways like increasing tipping fees. There's a Senate bill presently which would increase tipping fees at garbage landfills. As you probably know, there have been for many years, because of the very low tipping fees in Michigan compared to other Midwest states and compared to Canada, many out of state and even out of country in relation to Canada, garbage dumps into our Michigan, including Convis Township, which is part of the 62nd District. I'd like to increase tipping fees so we can make sure that some of that possibly would be used as a way to fund measurement of PFAS and how we can remediate PFAS as quickly as possible. This has become a real significant issue when I meet voters compared to the outset of the campaign back in the spring. Then it was mostly about roads and bridges. Certainly, I think that Governor candidate Whitmer has expressed an infrastructure bank strategy by which the state would fund some local infrastructure banks to benefit some local roads improvements. I think that my experience on the Calhoun County Board demonstrated to me the importance of collaboration with other local governments like Jackson County, and I'd like to do things more smartly like we were able to do in Calhoun County in terms of actually bringing the Calhoun Road Commission under the umbrella of the Board of Commissioners and becoming a road department, and then working collaboratively with Jackson County to bring more efficiencies. I think in addition, we'd probably want to look at options like applying the online sales tax revenue that's going to be forthcoming to roads and bridges and not allow it to be otherwise spent on different projects. I think roads and bridges are what and water most important to our Michigan citizens presently.
Well, what about broadband access? How do you come up with the money to get broadband into the places in the 62nd district and beyond where currently they don't have it?
Especially rural areas, places like Sheridan and Lee Township would be places that would fit into that category. Certainly there would be grant making that would have to be sought out to bring saleable infrastructure like broadband into those rural communities.
You mentioned wanting to bring good jobs to this district, advanced manufacturing, renewable energy. What's the plan for that? What makes the 62nd District or any part in Michigan attractive to companies that are in that business?
I think first you got to have the bones for attracting those kinds of jobs. And I think we do in the Albion Industrial Park and in the Fort Custer Industrial Park.
When you say bones, do you mean like buildings and infrastructure and that sort of thing?
I mean infrastructure specifically and shovel-ready sites on which to build. We also need to make certain we have a ready-to-perform workforce, state-of-the-art workforce that is well-educated and can bring skills training right to the job immediately. And additionally to that, beyond a workforce, we need to have infrastructure, and that means roads and bridges. It's very unattractive to potential employers to bring a factory to a community where the roads are crumbling, where the bridges are decommissioned for a period of time until some bridge repair can be done or a bridge replaced.
You mentioned education. The State House, or a State House committee rather, was recently debating how much student test scores should factor into evaluations. How do you truly evaluate who is doing a good job at the school level, at the district level? You know, there's a lot of complaints that there's too much testing, but if we're not going to rely as much on standardized testing, what do we do? How do we figure out who's doing it right, and maybe who can be a model for other districts?
In Michigan, we keep trying different testing modalities. MSTEP is the current testing modality. I should highlight that the MSTEP scores released in August 2018 demonstrated another diminution in cross public education MSTEP scoring in relation to the year before. I think it's demonstrated how difficult it is to do qualitative measurements by these tests, but forthrightly, I think it's difficult to assess how high a quality of education students are attaining without some such measurements. I think that we need to value our teachers in our K-12 education, allow them to teach, but there do have to be measurements like in K-STEP, which need to be part of that so we can indeed have dashboards, as the expression is presently, in terms of how districts are doing, what improvements they're making. I think in relation to how we can ensure that this trend of the past 7 or 8 years is reversed is invest more significantly in early childhood education so that children are ready for kindergarten and elementary grades when they arrive in elementary school. And I think that in elementary schools, there probably is a need for more wraparound programming. So probably a fortification of social workers, school nurses, other parapro professionals beyond the educators. I think we also have to prioritize a diminution in class sizes so that teachers can teach and not just try to ensure that a room isn't unruly. Again, I'm a lawyer. I represent teachers and parapros and workers' disability compensation disputes. I know well the challenges that are faced by educators in our classrooms in Battle Creek and in Albion.
You mentioned early childhood education. There has been an expansion of the slots available in Michigan. How much more of an expansion do we need? And again, where does the money come from?
I think we need to additionally expand it. It has, I think, proven successful in getting kids ready. It's not been proven successful by the MSTEP scores in 2018 compared to 2017, but I think we're still at an early stage in evaluating how early education is going to impact upon scores like MSTEP. In relation to where the money would come from, I served on the budget committee for Calhoun County Board of Commissioners for 6 of the 8 years I served on the board. I think one of the most important tools to utilize in relation to public policy is the budget, and I would prioritize early education, because if you don't pay for early education and an expansion of early education to get kids ready for K-12 education, well, you're going to pay later. It's like the old commercial from the Fram oil filter I remember as a child. Pay me now or pay a lot later. And you'd pay a lot later when kids aren't reading at readiness level with grade 3 and can't properly punctuate or put sentences together at grade 12.
So if you're setting priorities, what is there in the budget now that the state may be spending money on that you think they could spend less money on?
I think the state should spend less on corporate giveaways by tax cuts and tax incentivizations. I think we have to focus at present on our families in Michigan, our working families, in relation to, as I indicated, education, the roads on which they operate their vehicles, the higher education that they aspire their children to attain, and on health coverage and ensuring that we have better measurable health determinations in Michigan than we had certainly before 2014.
What would you do about Michigan's very high auto insurance rates?
I support the fair and affordable no-fault reform package that is before the House but will not be passed by this House in this session. I think that among the remedies that need to be accomplished would be a prohibition on auto no-fault insurers from using non-predictive bases like one's occupation or how much education one attained or one's gender to set fees. I would be supportive of creating a fee schedule in the Workers' Disability Compensation Agency program in Michigan. There's been a fee schedule since the late 1980s, and I think that that's worked well to modify those costs that workers' disability compensation insurers are charged for work-related injury treatment that workers receive. I think that that is also part of this proposed package, which I would like to pass next year, which I think would make no-fault more affordable. I'd also like to make sure that the Catastrophic Claims Association is more open to sunshine than it's been so far. I think we need to see what is in that fund and whether the $170 a year that's taken per vehicle to fund the Michigan Catastrophic Claims Association is in fact needed. But back to what was presented in this past session of the State House, that proposed bill was a pig in a poke kind of bill. That was a bill by which, yes, there would be lesser premiums, but for significantly less valuable coverage. And we want to make sure that it's not a trade of lesser premiums for insubstantial coverage.
Well, can the state continue to offer or provide lifetime benefits for people who are seriously injured in an auto accident and bring down rates in a meaningful way?
Yes. And it would be done through the clear and affordable no-fault reform package that I referenced above. The state would end up paying for those charges through the Medicaid program, but for the Catastrophic Claims Association payments for these kinds of catastrophic losses. So we need to make sure that insurers are fixing rates properly and are not just arbitrarily and capriciously fixing rates based upon willy-nilly variables like a credit score or a gender.
The proposal from the other side, of course, was to give people an option to say you can buy auto insurance, it's cheaper, but would not include the lifetime benefits. Is that fair to tell people up front, hey, look, you can buy this, it'll cost less. If something happens, you're not going to be covered in the same way?
I think it's poor public policy. I think it's poor public policy because if something happens catastrophic, those individuals, many of whom are struggling to make a mortgage payment or struggling to make an auto finance payment, would not elect the higher premium. And if something catastrophic were to happen, then, as I indicated, the state Medicaid system would be on the hook. So I think that the no-fault system as it exists presently needs some revision, but doesn't need wholesale overhaul. And I don't think we make good public policy by allowing people to opt out of catastrophic coverage.
Do you think a new Line 5 through the Straits of Mackinac with a new tunnel built to house it is the best solution for continuing to or for the energy needs or for the concerns about the pipeline in the Straits of Mackinac?
No. I think that the anchor strike that we had as recently as early April 2018 is an indication of just how significant a risk this is. Being from Battle Creek and with my law office on the Kalamazoo River, right where there was all kinds of Enbridge oil spill-related mediation from summer 2010 all the way through this summer, and probably will be for the rest of my life, it gives me, as it does other people from downriver in Marshall and Battle Creek areas, and for that matter, Galesburg, Augusta areas, it gives us a unique position to say that's a risky initiative to undertake because we've seen that. I think it is unfortunate that this is something that was done in the last months of the Snyder administration. I think that if this tunnel were built, it's going to be another 10 or so years before it's up and operational. And we have this great risk of that which could have taken place with this anchor strike as recently as April 2018, having the possibility of occurring anytime between now and 10 years' time out. And I think that that is too great a risk. I think just burying that in a tunnel is still a risky proposition in relation to Line 5.
Voters in Michigan will decide this November whether or not marijuana should be legalized for recreational purposes. That's Proposal 1. Do you think they should vote for it?
Yes. I think that marijuana regulation by criminal authorities hasn't worked adequately. I think that our policing agencies need to work on other issues. I think that the Proposal 1 regulatory apparatus would get marijuana out of the black market. I believe that there is taxing opportunity as well, in addition to regulation, and I think there would be revenue for not just local government, but additionally revenue depending upon how much is raised for infrastructure improvement like roads.
Proposal two is the redistricting initiative to put that in the hands of an independent commission. Do you support that?
I do. Proposal two is needed in context of a place like Battle Creek, which used to be part of remotely the 6th District and then more recently the 7th District, now is part of the 3rd District. It's a lesser star in relation to the 3rd District's galaxy, Grand Rapids, Rockford, even Hastings, I think, are prioritized in relation to Battle Creek. And that's a demonstration of what happens when politicians, not voters, choose districts. So in Battle Creek, we're just kind of lost in relation to where we ought to be, which should be connected to Kalamazoo or Jackson on the I-94 corridor. I can highlight, too, in the state legislative context, the 19th Senate District is an extraordinarily difficult district for a Democratic candidate, or any candidate but the Republican candidate, in which to be viable. And that's because the 19th Senate District isn't just Calhoun, but it's connected to Barry and Ionia, very Republican-dominated counties. I wasn't there in 2011 in relation to the redistricting of these state legislative districts, but that district is gerrymandered for a Republican candidate to consistently win that district. I wish we had a district as we did when Mark Schauer served Battle Creek and Jackson. I think it was a much more competitive district. And this is what happens when gerrymandering occurs, and it's why gerrymandering needs to be reformed by this commission that's proposed by the second proposal.
And then Proposal 3 is the Voting Access Initiative. Do you support that?
Yes. I know firsthand how complicated it is for some people to vote. And I, without hesitation, believe we need to do a better job of making voting easier rather than more complicated. It seems like in the past 15 or 20 years, there have been consistently efforts to make voting more complicated. And Proposal 3 would allow no reason absentee voting. It would allow one to exercise the straight party voting option. It would allow one to register to vote less durationally out than a month before. I think it's what we need, especially in the 21st century.
Should the governor and the legislature be subject to the Freedom of Information Act?
Yes. Without hesitation, that should be extended to the governor and the legislators as well. I think we need sunshine and we need public scrutiny in relation to what is being done at the executive as well as the legislative branches of government.
You mentioned at the beginning that you were really hoping for a Democratic majority in the State House and, of course, to be part of that majority. What would that mean qualitatively to the people of Michigan if the Democrats do control the House?
I think that a number of pent-up public policy changes that haven't been able to go forward for 20-plus years would, in fact, be considered and probably passed. For example, I think adding sexual identity as a protected status in relation to the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act would be passed. I think that there would be a much more aggressive response to the PFAS crisis, which I perceive is just going to grow and probably extend into years ahead and perhaps billions of dollars than we've received so far. I think the Republicans have demonstrated an inertia-ridden attitude to going forward. Certainly with roads, it's going to cost us a lot more to repair our roads than would have been if the can hadn't been kicked for so many years by the Republicans who have controlled the state executive branch for the past 8 years, the state legislature. They've controlled the state Senate since 1983, and the state Supreme Court in terms of the majority at the Supreme Court. So I think it's time to let another party have some opportunity to shape public policy in Michigan, or at least have some fresh voices as part of that shaping of public policy in Michigan.
Now, you said that if the Republicans retain the majority and you're in the state house, you'll work across the aisle. What if you're in the majority? Does the same hold? Will you reach out to Republicans and search for some sort of bipartisan agreement on the issues you say are important to the state house district?
Yes. I think, and Dave Maturin, who represented the 63rd district, is someone I would have worked well together in the state house. I think that he and I both had the same ideas about the dark stores problem and how we could address that problem. I think that that issue has been recently decided in the way that Dave was advocating by our state Supreme Court. I recently met for the first time Mr. Hall. I've also had an opportunity to meet Ms. Aniano. I recognize that Jennifer Aniano is running in a difficult district for the Democratic candidate. If she isn't one selected by the voters, then I recently met Matt Hall, and for example, we had a common denominator agreement in relation to both wanting to repeal the senior tax on pensions that was put in place by the Republican majority in relation to the early year or two of the Snyder administration.
So Democrats look at this state house seat as one that they are hoping to use to take control of the state house and get the majority. But President Trump did pretty well in Calhoun County in 2016. Have things changed that much in the last 2 years?
I don't know. That is to say, I don't know all the variables that brought about the 2016 outcome. President Trump did better in the 63rd component of Calhoun County than he did in the 62nd component of Calhoun County. I think that at this point, given a lot of that which has been roiling in Washington and how it's impacted in terms of uncertainty, and you can examine the markets and the volatility of the markets over the past several days, and for that matter, the past several weeks, to determine how people process that uncertainty. I think that there is an attitude that we need some Democratic legislators in place in state houses as well as congressional offices to act as a thermostat circuit breaker to some of that kind of uncertainty. I think that Calhoun County has many of the same challenges it had in 2016. I think that our county, in terms of our talk about Battle Creek specifically, jobs and some of our lifestyle isn't as good, in my opinion, as it was 15 and 25 years ago. We need to do a better job of by appropriations, bringing back more resources to Battle Creek and Albion on the east side of the district, and making Battle Creek and Albion lively places to live and places in which business wants to transfer or start up its companies.
Jim Hodsma is the Democratic candidate for State House in the 62nd District. That includes the cities of Battle Creek, Albion, and Springfield, as well as Albion, Bedford, Clarence, Convis, Lee, Penfield, and Sheridan Townships. Thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you for the opportunity, Gordon.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.